want to pass an idea by you that I was thinking of in the last few days. It has to do with Sfiras HaOmer, and since this coming week's Sedra has the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer in it, it is very relevant on two counts. In addition, it has to do with next week's Sedra too. Bahar, which we'll see also is included. So on three counts, this is a very relevant topic. The Torah says, in regards to Sfiras HaOmer, Usfartim lachem mimochras ha-shabos, miyom ha-viachem es omer ha-tnufa, sheva shabosos tmimos tiyeno, ad mimochras ha-shabos ha-shviis tisperu chamishim yom. That same sentence, the Torah uses Shabbos two different ways, and it doesn't mean Shabbos. Usfartim lachem mimochras ha-shabos, the rabbi said, does not mean from the day after Shabbos Chol HaMoed Pesach. It means from the day after the first day of Yom Tov. And Yom Tov is called Shabbos. Shabbos, Shabboson, right? The Yom HaRishon, Shabboson. Yom Tov is also referred to as Shabbos, and therefore it means from the day after the first day of Yom Tov, when we start counting the Omer on the second day of Pesach. Then it says, till the last Shabbos. Now that doesn't mean a day of Yom Tov, that means the end of the week of 7 weeks. There, Shabbos means week. So in the same sentence, Shabbos means Yom Tov, Shabbos means a week. Why did the Torah change the terminology? Why did it say, Usfartam lechem mimachras Yom Tov Rishon Shal Shabbos, right? Mikra Kodesh HaRishon, whatever the Torah would have said. Speaking about Shabbos, right? About Yom Tov, so it's mentioned Yom Tov. And it could have said, Ad mimochras ha-shavua ha-shavis. Why call it Shabbos? I was thinking of the following idea, and I think that there's some really interesting ideas to think about here. First of all, Shabbos itself has in it a few different ideas. Shabbos is a testimony that God created the world. So it is reminiscent of Shabbos Bereishis, of the very first Shabbos of creation, where God rested from creating, which, as we've explained in the past, not going into it now, tells us that God created the world. The world does not come about by itself, didn't always exist, it was created. And it also has in it the idea of Shabbos Shelo Asid Lavo, of Olam Haba, of Trias HaMesim, of the resurrection of the dead, of the world to come, which is also called Shabbos. And the idea is that not only did God create the world, but he created it with a plan, and eventually that plan will be accomplished. So the world has a beginning, and it has an end. That is, or a purpose. That is Shabbos Shel. And then there's the Shabbos of Matan Torah. Shabbos when the Torah was given. Torah was given on Shabbos. And the Shabbos also hints to the Shabbos of the giving of the Torah. Now those three ideas are hinted to in the three different davenings of Shabbos. On a Yom Tov, we daven the same davening for Shachris, Mariv, and Mincha. But on Shabbos, we daven a different davening for Mariv, Shachris, and Mincha. Mariv, we say, Atoki Dashto, Vayechulu, which is corresponds to the Shabbos of Bereishis. Shabbos morning, we say Yismach Moshe b'matnas chelko, which corresponds to the Shabbos of the giving of the Torah. And Mincha, we say Ato Echad, the Shimcha Echad, which speaks about the time when God will be one, when the whole world will accept him, when Mashiach will come, when the world to come will come, and that is the Shabbos of the future. So these three aspects of Shabbos are hinted to in the davening of Shabbos. There's another aspect, though, that supplements Shabbos. Shabbos just tells me that God created the world, that God had a plan, and the plan will come to fruition at some point, and God gave us a Torah. It doesn't tell me that God is constantly involved in the workings of the world and in the development of history. That Yom Tov teaches me. That is the extension of Shabbos, which also teaches me that God is involved in the world. Every yontif represents a different aspect of God's connection and involvement in history. Yetzias Mitzrayim, Sukkos, Matan Torah, each yontif represents God's involvement in the world too. And the Gemara says that whoever does not keep yontif is like his Mechal Shabbos. Because if you don't believe that God is constantly involved in the workings and history of the world, then for all practical purposes, you don't really believe that God created the world, because it's irrelevant. So in order to make Shabbos really relevant, you have to keep Yom Tov too. And therefore the Rosh says that whoever doesn't believe in Asher Hotzi Sicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim, that I took you out of Egypt, meaning that I'm involved on an ongoing basis in what goes on in the world, doesn't believe in Anochi Hashem Elokecha, doesn't really believe in God's existence, because he believes it in a way that's totally abstract. That God, yeah, he was involved, like Nietzsche. God is dead. He created the world, and after that, not involved anymore. By the way, I once saw that somebody put graffiti on a wall, "God is dead," and signed it Nietzsche. Somebody else wrote graffiti under it, "Nietzsche is dead," and signed it God. In any case, so in order to make our belief in God and in creation and in the fact that the world was created with a plan and a purpose relevant, we have to also believe that God didn't abandon the world and he's involved in the world constantly. Now, with that introduction, I think there's something extremely interesting about the Yontif of Pesach. Okay. Before Pesach starts, the Shabbos before is called Shabbos HaGadol. Then, the first day of Pesach is also called Shabbos. And then, the day before Shavuos is also called Shabbos. Ad Mochris HaShabbos HaShvi'i. Why? Because each of these days represents these ideas of Shabbos. Shabbos HaGadol. What did we learn on Shabbos HaGadol before we were taken out of Egypt? That the Jewish people had to take the lamb and show that they didn't believe in the idolatry of Egypt and negate and deny the validity of idolatry. The Egyptians felt that the world is run and governed by all different kinds of powers, and we believe that God created the world. So the negation of idolatry is the first idea of Shabbos. Shabbos HaGadol. But that has two ideas in it. One, that God created the world. And also that there's going to be an end, a purpose, a plan. Right? That God created the world, and because he created it, he had a plan when he created it. That represents the first two aspects. The aspect of creation and the aspect of Shabbos of the future, Shabbos Shelo Asid Lavo, Shabbos HaGadol. See, one second, another reason why it's referred to as HaGadol. But that's one aspect. Then there is another aspect. The fact, the extension of Shabbos, that God is involved in the running of the world on an ongoing basis. That is the first day of Pesach. Another aspect of the extension of Shabbos, the Yontif aspect of Shabbos, which makes Shabbos valid and validates the Shabbos, that I don't only believe that God created the world, I believe that he hasn't abandoned it and he's involved in it. He doesn't create it, say that there's a purpose and leave it on its own. He guides the world towards that purpose. That is the first day of Pesach, where God took us out of Egypt and showed that he's involved in what goes on in the world. And then the last Shabbos is the Shabbos that inaugurates the giving of the Torah. Right, that we were ready to get the Torah. Mimachras HaShabbos HaShvi'is. That's when we got the Torah, and that's the third aspect of Shabbos, the giving of the Torah. Now, what does that add? So, Shabbos Bereishis teaches me that God created the world, had a plan, and the world will reach its purpose at some point. The Shabbos of Yetzias Mitzrayim, Yontif, teaches me that God didn't abandon the world, and he's involved constantly. The Shabbos of Matan Torah teaches me that man has to be involved. it's not just God created and God's bringing the world towards it, and we're just bystanders. No. All of that depends on us. We have a Torah which lays out that plan. God used the Torah to create the world. And through the Torah, we utilize the tool which God used to create the world to be able to further that plan. So we are like God's partners, and we have free choice, and we have to make the right choices. And if we do, there's reward and there's punishment. And we are the ones who are very, even though God created the world and he's bringing the world towards its completion and he's involved, he wants us to have free choice, to be dynamic, and he gave us the plan of the world. And he told us, you bring it to fruition. You have a very important part in this. That's our part. So the other two parts are God's part. God's involvement, God's creation, God's bringing the world towards its completion. The Shabbos of Matan Torah is our part. Now comes the clincher. Each of these parts is connected to the word Sfor, Sipur, Sfira, household. The first part of God's creating the world has a counting connected to it, but not that we count, that the Beis Din counts. The Jewish court counts the years to Shemitah and to Yovel. What does the mitzvah of Shemitah and Yovel teach me? That it's God's earth. He created it. And if he tells us not to work 1 year with the land, we don't work. It's not our earth. So it teaches me that God created the world. Yovel teaches me that the world has a purpose, a goal. One day the world was created to exist seven cycles of 7,000 years. And the ultimate, the 50th year, is the goal of everything. That is the symbol of Olam Haba, of Tchias HaMesim, of the final goal of the world. So Shemitah and Yovel both bring home the idea of Shabbos, that God created the world, and Shabbos of Olam Haba, that God created the world with a purpose, that one day that purpose will be achieved. There's an end. There's a beginning and there's an end. That is Sfira of Yovel and Shemitah. We count. Svartem. Sheva Shabso Shonim. Next week's Edra. Okay, the counting. There, every individual doesn't count because it's something that nobody was a witness to. Nobody's a witness to the creation of the world or to Olam Haba. And therefore, it's all Mesorah. It's all tradition. You need the Chachamim to tell you that what the tradition is, what they received. Right, from Har Sinai, tradition-wise, that God created the world. And therefore, the Beis Din makes this counting. The Beis Din is the one that counts for us because they're the ones that establish this tradition. Then comes the Shabbos of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Not only did God create the world, not only is there a goal, but God is involved constantly. That we witnessed. We witnessed the exodus from Egypt. Then is next the word Es Samach Peresh. Laman Tesaper Boozne Bincho Ben Bincho. Now it's not just counting, it's telling. You tell your children. Laman Tesaper, why? Because you witnessed it. And you now can testify to your children. That's Haggadah. The Higavitol of Incho. Testify to them. Tell them the story. And you're the one who have to now continue this tradition because you witnessed it. You're a witness, therefore you can tell it over. And if you tell it over, then you will establish that tradition strongly. Leman tesaper bozne bincho ben bincha vidatem ki ani Hashem, and then all of you will know that I am God. But you are the ones who tell it over. Right? So it goes from based in counting to establish the tradition that God created the world. Then, to take it the next step further, that God's involved in the world, that we witnessed, and each generation passes it on and tells it and relates it and testifies towards that to the next generation. And then comes the next, Usfartem Lochem. Now you have to count. Not for your children, not the Beis Din, you for yourself. That is Torah. That's the third aspect. You count now Sfira Saomer towards the giving of the Torah, the third aspect of Shabbos, The idea of Shabbos of Matan Torah. What is that? Tell me that you have to be involved. It's not enough that God created the world, that he's involved in the world. You are dynamic. Therefore, it's not something that you first tell your children. First, you have to uncover from the Torah. You have to learn the Torah. You have to prepare yourself to learn the Torah. You have to uncover in the Torah your responsibilities, your potential, and then give it over to your children. That is the idea of constantly remembering the giving of the Torah. It says, lest you forget what you saw with your eyes, and then after you remember yourself, tell it over to your children. The day you stood at Har Sinai. That is the third aspect, but that is more not primarily tell over to others. What you witnessed, you can tell others. You don't have to do anything. But even though we witness the giving of the Torah, the giving of the Torah is an ongoing thing, and each person has to discover his part in the Torah by learning it. So first, Hishomer lecho ushmor nafshecho ma'od. You be very careful. Count usfartem lochem. Count for yourself. And you discover what your part in all of this is, and then you can give over to your children. When you discover what your part is, you can give over to your children what you've discovered in the Torah, that they should be connected to the giving of the Torah also. So that is why the Torah uses the word Shabbos for what's it called for these things. There's the Shabbos HaGadol before Pesach, there's the Shabbos of the first day of Pesach, and there's the Shabbos, the concept of Shabbos that precedes Shavuos, which is representative of all these Shabbosos. The Shabbos of Bereshis and Olam Haba, the Shabbos of Matan Torah, and the concept of Yontif, that God is involved in the world. I was thinking there's another thing that you can connect to this idea. And that is, before the Torah was given, we were given three mitzvahs in Mora. If you think about it, those three mitzvahs represent these three ideas. What were the mitzvahs? The first one was Shabbos, which is the regular idea that God created the world. Regular Shabbos. Shabbos HaGadol. We were given Shabbos in Mora. Then we were given Kibud Av V'Em. In order to be able to tell over to your children, the children should accept it, they have to respect their parents. So there has to be Kibud Av V'Em, and the parents have to be fit to be respected. So there has to be a relationship between parents and children to be able to pass on the second aspect, which is the Shabbos of Yontif, of God's involvement in the world. And lastly, Dinim. Dinim is that we should be able to learn the laws of how to apply the Torah into the world to know how we can promote what God created with a plan and is involved in, and he wants us to be his partners, to exercise our free choice to put the Torah into the world. And that's din. That are the laws, the Torah laws that govern society. That's what we were given before, and they represent mamish these three things. I was thinking, it also explains the death of the students of Rabbi Akiva during this time. The students of Rabbi Akiva were supposed to be the people who transmitted the oral Torah to the next generation. Okay? In order to do that, you have to learn the Torah yourself, and in order to do that, you can't forget what you learned, and you have to consider the Torah extremely important. Okay? You shouldn't forget. You shouldn't, And that's the way of doing that is by recognizing the importance of Torah and the importance of a human being in the scheme of everything. Because the Torah guides the life of human beings, of Jews. And the Torah is like the instruction book for life. And we've explained in the past that if life is important, then the Torah is important. Because the more important the thing, the more important the instruction book. But the less important the thing, the less important, or there's no need for instructions. Right? When I got this little MP3, Right? Cost a significant amount. There came an instruction book how to use it properly. But when I bought the last package of tissues that I bought, there was no instructions there. Because if I misuse it, I'll buy another one. It's not worth printing the instructions. So if the Torah is the instruction book for life, then the Torah is important if life is important. And the opposite is also true. The more important the Torah is, the more important life is. The more important life is, the more important the Torah is. So in order to appreciate that first role of being able to give over the Torah to the next generation, they had first had to have it themselves. So they had to appreciate the importance of life, of Torah, and of human beings. And therefore, what's it called? That's the idea of Yohavta Re'acha Kamocha. And they didn't. Because Lo Noagu Kovod Zeh B'Zeh. They didn't give each other the proper honor. They didn't appreciate how important life was, so they didn't appreciate how important the Torah was. So if you don't appreciate how important it is, you forget it. You don't keep it in mind all the time. And if you forget it, you can't give it over to the next generation. And also, the second sin they had was they didn't discuss Torah one with the other. In order to really remember the Torah, you have to review it, and if you learn by yourself, it says you forget and you don't really get the message. So you have to have a give and take with somebody else. So same thing. They weren't able to realize not to forget the Torah by having that give and take with others. The second sin they had is they didn't share their Torah one with the other. And lastly, they didn't fulfill that purpose of giving it over to the next generation because they didn't fill Eretz Yisrael with Torah. They didn't go and spread their Torah. And because of that, they didn't understand the concept of Sfiras HaOmer, where the Shabbos before Pesach teaches me that God created the world and he has a plan. The Shabbos of what's it called, of Pesach itself, of Yontif, teaches me that God's involved with the world. But the Shabbos of Matan Torah teaches me that God wants us to be dynamic. That is Sfiras HaOmer, Sfartim Lachem. You have to count. Not the Beis Din counts, not you tell it over to your children, but you count for yourself. And that was a Talmid of Rabbi Akiva, didn't appreciate that, and therefore they died during Sfiras HaOmer, which teaches me this idea, and they couldn't fulfill their purpose of being the transmitters of Torah. Therefore, if they didn't fulfill their purpose, they had no purpose to be here, and they died. That, I think, is a very interesting idea of tying together both the three Shabboses around Pesach, before Pesach, and Shavuos, that the Torah speaks about, and the mitzvahs of Sfira, based in counting Shemitah and Yovel, which is like Shabbos HaGadol, a person's Sipur, Yitzias Mitzrayim, tell it over to others, that enhances the fact that we witness God's involvement in the world, and then Usfartem Lochem, you count for yourself, that's the idea of Torah. Okay, something to think about. I want to go into another thing, which I know I've spoken about here before, but I think the faces were, for the most part, different, except for the Portnoy's and the Hoffman's. It's been a while since I spoke about this, and it's one of my pet topics. I really think that what I'm going to tell you is relevant to every one of us. I've said this over thousands of times, maybe 10,000, all over the world, from Israeli Beis Yaakov principals, not just teachers, to fresh American Balei Tshuva. And I haven't found an audience yet that can't relate to it. I even remember saying it once on a weekend in Australia, together with Rabbi Frand. And then I found out that he quoted me a few weeks later. What's it called? He must have also liked the idea. Somebody told me he quoted me in his book also. In any case, okay, so obviously he gave me his hascom on this, in this idea. It has to do with next week's Sedra, not this coming week's Sedra, next week's Sedra. It has to do with Sfiras HaOmer. One of the ideas behind Sfiras HaOmer, the Sefer HaChinuch says, is the idea that one has to yearn towards growth if he's going to achieve anything. And if we didn't yearn, aspire towards the giving of the Torah and look forward to it, then it wouldn't have had any effect on us. And therefore, before the Torah was given, we had to count anxiously the days. When will I get the Torah? 1 day has passed. 2 days has passed. What? When will I be able to get the Torah? Because if you don't yearn and aspire towards great things, towards higher things, you won't accomplish anything. The Michtam Eliyahu brings us out from a medrash, which we've mentioned here many times with different interpretations. I'll tell you what he says, a little embellishment of my own. This is all just a preface. And get to what I want to speak about. The Medrash says like this, Rabbi Akiva was giving a drasha, and his students began to fall asleep. Nothing has changed in 2,000 years. And he wanted to wake them up. So he said, what did Esther see that enabled her to rule over 127 provinces? Let Esther, the great-great-granddaughter of Sarah, who lived 127 years, rule over 127 provinces. So they all woke up. What in the world is there a connection between Esther's 127 provinces and Sarah's 127 years, except that it's the same number? Rabbi Akiva went on. Says the Michtam Eliyahu, what was Rabbi Akiva telling his students? He surmised that the reason that they weren't paying attention is because they thought he was speaking about levels way above their head, way beyond them. And they reasoned like this. What's the purpose of listening to this? It's something way beyond us. So we might as well get a little rest now. So when Rabbi Akiva comes down to our level, we'll be well rested and be able to listen. So that's what they did. Rabbi Akiva said, you're making a big mistake. Do you know how Esther was able to develop the quality of leadership, of malchus, of royalty, that enabled her to rule over 127 provinces? Because she always aspired her whole life to be like Sarah. Sarah lived 127 years. The Torah says all her years were for the good. Doesn't mean they all were good, but it means that she ruled over every second of her life. She couldn't control what came her way, but she could control how she related to it. That is the ultimate malchus, the ultimate royalty, being able to control everything in your life. Not what comes your way, but how you relate to it, how you react to it, how you use it, all for the good. Her whole life, Esther aspired to be like Sarah, to be in total control. She never reached that level. But because she aspired to it, she reached her potential. She was able to rule over 127 provinces. Had she not aspired towards the heights of Sarah, she never would have reached her own potential. Therefore, it says, every Jew has to say, when will my deeds reach the deeds of Avraham? Do we think we're ever going to be like that? No. But if you don't aspire to that, we'll never reach our own potential. So aspiring is very, very important. If you don't have a goal, if you don't have a dream, a wish, you'll accomplish nothing. My Rosh Yeshiva pointed out that the Gemara says, Harotza lahashkim yadrim. Person who wants to be wise should daven a little bit towards the, facing a little bit towards the south. Because the menorah was in the south of the Mishkan, and the menorah is a symbol of wisdom, so davening towards the south is a skula for wisdom. Now, Rosh Yeshiva asked, why did the Gemara just say simply, Hayadrin Yachkin? If you daven to the south, you'll be wise. Why do you have to say, whoever wants to be wise should daven to the south? He said, because if you don't want to be wise, you can daven towards the south a million times a day, you'll never be wise. Everything starts with a desire. First you have to want to be wise. Then if you do the right things, you'll be wise. But if you don't want to be wise, you can do all the right things, you'll never be wise. So a desire, an aspiration, a longing towards improvement, towards something more than I am, a desire for growth, is an extremely important part of Judaism. Now we're going to start the topic I want to speak about. If you don't constantly want to improve and slowly but surely improve your status as a observant Jew, meaning you constantly learn more, you improve your level of learning, your amount of learning total, and you improve your status of observance of mitzvahs. You do more. You do it better. You learn more about what there is to do. And you implement it. If you don't do that, if you stagnate, then inevitably you go down. Somebody once told me this world is like a down escalator that you're trying to go up. Children do it all the time. Adults would love to do it, and they just hold themselves back. But if you go up a down escalator and you stop, what happens? You go down. If you walk, you may stand still. If you run, you may get a little bit higher. That's what this world is. If you stand still, you go down. If you put in effort, you'll be able to improve. How bad is it if you don't? How bad is it if you stagnate? You found your comfortable niche in Yiddishkeit. You don't want to learn anymore. You don't want to improve anymore. You just want to do what you did yesterday, last week, where your parents did it, their parents did it. Status quo Judaism, that's what I call it. Status quo Judaism. How bad is that? There's a Rashi in this coming week's Sedra, next week's Sedra, that says the following. In bechukosai telechu, if you put effort, shiyu amelim batorah, if you put effort in Torah, then you will get all the blessings that will bring Mashiach. All the blessings of the ideal world for just putting effort in Torah. By improving constantly, God will see to it that you'll be able to improve until the ideal. But what happens if you don't put an effort? Imlo you are mailing by Torah. You won't put an effort in Torah. And the way we're explaining effort in Torah means you won't want to change. Change is very difficult. It's much more comfortable to remain status quo. You're comfortable. This is the way I did it yesterday. This is the way I'll do it tomorrow. No change in my life. No improvement. No effort. Just glide along. What happens? Rashi says, you will go down seven levels. Seven levels. And I'm going to mention them quickly, and then I'll go over each one and explain what it means. You won't, if you don't want to put effort, you don't want to change the way we're explaining, you don't want to improve, you won't learn, you won't fulfill the mitzvahs properly, you'll be disgusted with people who keep the mitzvahs, you will hate the rabbis, you will try to prevent people from keeping mitzvahs, you will deny the validity of the mitzvah, and finally you'll deny the validity of God. Now that sounds pretty harsh. Sounds like just not putting effort in Torah, you're going to go down that down escalator to the bargain basement and not be a believer in God. Now that doesn't seem to be realistic, because I know a lot of people that practice status quo Judaism, found their comfortable niche, never want to learn anything, never want to improve, and they're not heretics. They're people, nice, frum Jews, Shomer Shabbos, right? So what are you going to tell me? Wait, next year they're going to not believe in God. I can't accept that, because many of these people have been like that for three generations. So how long can you wait? Okay, what are you going to tell me? Okay, really deep down inside, they don't believe in any of this. I find that hard to believe. So what does it mean? What does it mean? Rashi says, if you don't put effort into Torah, right? And Rashi's quoting Chazal. It's not Rashi's own idea. You're going to go down seven levels. Let me tell you what I think it means. And it is so realistic that it's shocking. Let me use the example I always give. When I first became a rabbi in Miami, so we had many elderly people there who never had a yeshiva education. It wasn't available to them, but they were brought up in Shomer Shabbos homes, or they became Shomer Shabbos, and they were frying frum Jews. And they kept Shabbos. They didn't drive, and they didn't carry, and they didn't answer the phone, and didn't turn on lights. They didn't know too much more than that. They didn't know too much about the 39 malachos, and certain things were just beyond their knowledge. So I figured that maybe one of the first things I'm going to do is to institute a shir every day between Mincha and Maariv, when these people were in shul. Most of the people came to shul for Mincha and Maariv were the elderly people who were retired, and they could come in the afternoon, even in the winter when it was early. And there was a 20-minute spot between Mincha and Maariv before you could daven Maariv. So I used to give a shir in the laws of Shabbos. just so they should be acquainted with some of the more intricate laws. I remember we were discussing the laws of Borer. Borer means selecting, right? That if you have something that's a mixture of things, good and bad, right? So you can't take the bad from the good. You have to take the good from the bad. It can't be with an implement. It has to be for immediate use. Very, you'll excuse the pun, nitpicking halachas. Okay? Very intricate halachas, all details of what you can do and how you have to do it or whatever. You're eating fish and it has bones. Can you take the bones from the fish or the fish with the bones, with a fork, without a fork? Very intricate halachas. Now, while we were discussing this, a very distinguished doctor who was his early 30s, Shomer Shabbos man, but never went to a yeshiva, had a real Torah education, fell into the shul by accident because he thought that Maariv was earlier than it was. And when you walked into the shul at the time, you walked into the shir. There was no vestibule. You walked in, they were there. He was too polite to walk out. So he sat down. And we're discussing all these details. And I see his eyes are bulging. After the shir, he comes over to me and says, "Rabbi, are there really people who do all of this?" Now, I was like a few months out of the kollel. I didn't think there weren't people who didn't do all of this. So we were both surprised. So let's use this person as an example, okay? Truth is, he's not really a good example because he went on to be a very, very, he improved and his family grew in Torah very much. But let's use him anyway at that point. Here's a guy, he's Shomer Shabbos, okay? He doesn't answer the phone, he doesn't turn on lights, but Borer, that's like too much for me, right? I'm not interested in these details, right? It's just going to complicate my life. I don't want to know about this Borer thing. And I don't want to change. I don't want to implement it. I just want to be ignorant of it and keep my Shabbos the way I did last week and the week before. Don't confuse me with this Borer thing. Okay. So a person likes to be comfortable and he doesn't want to change. There's only one problem. That people who have in the back of their head an idea that there's something more to do feel guilty. And guilt is not comfortable. So how does a person not improve and not feel guilty about it? So the Sutton devised 7 defense mechanisms to make it that you shouldn't feel guilty. Seven defense mechanisms that you shouldn't feel guilty from the fact that you don't want to change and improve. And those are what these 7 levels are, and now I'll describe them in great detail. The first level. Okay, I don't want to know from this Borer thing. I don't want to feel guilty, though, about not doing it. So the first thing I have to do, and all of this is subconscious. This is not consciously thought out. It's all subconscious. First thing I have to do is not learn. That doesn't mean I don't learn anything. I could learn Kabbalah. I could learn Musa. I could whatever. I just can't learn anything that smells from the laws of Shabbos. Because for fear that somebody's going to mention this Borer thing and I'm going to find out and I'll feel guilty. Because I don't want to change. I don't want to do it. But I don't want to know about it. Ignorance is bliss. So I can convince myself that Borer has nothing to do with me. It probably has to do with farmers and factories. What in the world could I do Borer in my kitchen? Right? So it's probably not something that's any relevance to me. And as long as I don't learn, I can fool myself into thinking that. So the first level down as a defense mechanism is don't learn. Because you may find out things that you don't want to know because you don't want to do them. And if you know them, you'll feel guilty. It's better not to know. First level down. Next level. Okay, so I don't learn, I don't know. And the next level is I don't do. If you don't know, you can't do. Okay. So I don't know about this Borer thing. And I love to eat fish with bones. I don't like filter fish. I like fish with bones. That's not really true, but I'm saying I'm this guy. And it's really a pain to take these little bones out of the fish every time you eat it. I pass by a store one day, one of these novelty stores, and I see this hand-operated contraption that if you put fish in it, in one swoop, it extracts all the bones. It debones the fish automatically. I say, wow, this is something for Shabbos. I buy it. I go and get it silver plated. And I inscribe on it, L'Kovod Shabbos Kodesh. And every Friday night, my wife brings out all the fish for the whole Shabbos. And we have this ritual, right? Put the fish into this contraption, push the lever, all the bones come out, and now I have fish on deboned for the entire Shabbos. And I do this L'Kovod Shabbos Kodesh. I've just transgressed a Torah prohibition. Everything that could be wrong is wrong. I'm using a utensil that's made for this. I'm doing it the bad from the good, and I'm doing it not for immediate use, for the next meal and the meal after that. It is a Torah prohibition, and I'm doing this Torah prohibition, L'Kovod Shabbos Kodesh. So I'm a Chal Shabbos, L'Kovod, but I don't know, and I don't want to know. So I'm already down to level two. I didn't learn, I don't do. Next level. Okay, this goes on for a few weeks, months, years, who knows, and I'm very content, no guilt feelings. And I, every Friday night, use my bone plucker, L'Kovod Shabbos Kodesh. One Friday night, my neighbor invites me to eat in his home. He's more knowledgeable, and he's more observant, and he knows about this Borer thing. They serve fish, and the tach is fish with bones. I say to myself, oh, I should have brought my bone plucker with me, right? Too bad I didn't. And then, I see my friend sitting there studying the fish. Looking this way, that way, picking up his fork, putting it down, and I start to feel guilty. There's something about the eating this fish on Shabbos that has to do with Borer. Otherwise, what's he studying the fish for? Right? So now I don't want to feel, this guy's making me feel guilty. Because I don't want to do this, I don't know about it, I don't want to know about it, I don't want to do it, and I'm beginning to feel guilty because of this guy. So I go now to level three. Moesh ba'acherim ha'osim. I become disgusted with people who keep mitzvahs. Not all the mitzvahs, just the ones I don't want to do. And I look at the guy and I say, you know what? This is not normal. This guy's a fanatic, right? This is not normal. Normal people don't study their fish. They eat it. This guy is off the wall. He's shachar. He's a whatever. You pick the language. He's a chnyok, right? You pick the language. Whatever the language is, a word that describes somebody who's doing what you don't want to do, and you have to make him into a monster, isn't to make you feel guilty. So you make him into a fanatic, right? A kitzoni, shachar, pick the word, chnyok, right? I don't want to be a chnyok. This is not normal, right? I just want to be normal. So I don't feel guilty anymore that I don't do this, because this is not normal. This is off the wall. Nope. So I go home, I feel great, the guy's a nut. Right? Anybody who does this has got to be off the wall. And I go to sleep, get up in the morning, make a bracha, shalom, asani chnyok, I feel great. Right? I'm already down to the third level. I go to shul, the rabbi gets up, and he says, you know, I've noticed that we have a lot of very fine people who want to keep Shabbos in our kehillah, but many of you don't know the basic laws of Shabbos, like Borer. Oh, no. I want to discuss the laws of Borer now in my sermon. I says, oh no, I'm a captive audience. I don't want to hear about this Borer thing. It's going to make me feel guilty. And I can't say the rabbi is a fanatic because my rabbi, that my conscience won't accept that. So I have to go down to level four. Hate the rabbis. What does that mean? I look at the rabbi and I say, it's not that I don't want to listen to what the rabbi has to say. Chas v'sholom. I'd love to hear Torah, but not from that mouth. That rabbi is not a mensch. Why? 20 years ago, he passed my grandmother in the street. He didn't say good morning. He is an animal. And from animals, I don't accept anything. I wouldn't listen to him if he said the Ten Commandments or the Gettysburg Address. Right? Not from that mouth. And it's not chas v'sholom that I want to learn Torah. Yes, but not from him. Now, what happens if you didn't have a grandmother? Right? Or you didn't like your grandmother. So that's not a good excuse. So then you say, that rabbi, he's in it for the money. Look at the sharp car that he drives. I'm not going to listen from him. Right? He's a money grub. Or, that rabbi's a schlepper. Look at the jalopy he drives. You can always impugn a person if you can't impugn what they're going to say. So I don't want to hear what he has to say. But chas v'sholom, my conscience won't let me say I don't want to listen to Torah. Right? So therefore, I have to... I have to impugn the person. So I begin to hate authority. If you don't think that's true, let me tell you, when I was in Miami, I had a balabas. I was much younger at the time. And I was younger than most of my balabatim, and they were established lawyers, doctors. And I was intimidated by many of them. And I couldn't confront them many times with things that I would have liked to confront them with. There was one balabas who really didn't like me. I mean, really didn't like me. Now, that's not unusual for a rabbi. A lot of times, rabbis said people don't like them. And sometimes it's warranted, sometimes not. Usually you knew. This guy couldn't figure out what I did to him. He mamish hated me. To the point where I thought maybe I murdered his mother and I forgot about it.
That's hard to believe.
Right? Right? No. It was even more hard to believe because he didn't like his mother. So that couldn't have been the purpose. That couldn't have been the thing. Lemaisa, and I was intimidated to confront him. Why don't you like me? What did I do to you? And I let it go till 10 minutes before Ne'ilah on Yom Kippur. We had a break, and I said, I can't go into Ne'ilah. Maybe I really did something to this guy that I remember. So I called him over privately before Ne'ilah, and I said, look, I get the feeling you don't like me in a big way. I must have done something to you that you're upset about. Tell me what it was. I'd be happy to either explain or ask your forgiveness, and we can go into Ne'ilah friends. He looks at me straight in the eye. He says, Rabbi, I hate your guts. It's just what I had to hear before Davin Neil. So I said, okay, he got it out of his system. Why? He says, because when you finish your drushes, I feel guilty. I thought to myself, oh, I guess I'm doing my job, but I didn't say that to him. I said, look, so if that's the case, go to the bathroom and stay there during the drusha. Right? That's not my intention to make you feel guilty. Right? If that's what it makes you feel, take a walk. Don't make it obvious that you're leaving before I speak. Okay, and we made up. And we were friends till Sukkot, and then something else happened, and we were not friends again. I don't know exactly what. In any case, so it happens. People don't like authority figures. They don't like people who make them feel guilty. Okay. So now I'm down to level number 4, hating the rabbis. Not everybody's like me. The rabbi said, you know, if you really want to keep Shabbos properly, you got to learn, you got to know what the laws are. So a friend of mine comes over, one of my friend, my chevra, after davening, he says, you know what? The rabbi's right. We don't know a lot of the laws. So we approached the rabbi. Could he give us a class in the laws of Shabbos? We're starting with the laws of Borer. Would you like to join? Oh, my God, it's the last thing in the world I want to join. And I can't tell my friends, you know, that they're a bunch of fanatics or something. These are my friends. This is my chevra. Now I have to go down to level number 5. Try to convince people not to keep mitzvahs. Not all the mitzvahs, just the ones you don't want to do. So I tell my friend to follow it. I say, you know what? You want to become more frum? You want to start keeping the laws of Borer? Kol hakavod. But let me warn you that this is a step in a very dangerous direction. Because you are entering a slippery slope. You're going to start to do more now, and it never ends. You'll be machmer now in Borer, and then you'll be machmer in something else. I give you 2 weeks, you'll be taking a shower with a black hat on. Right? No shiloh. That's where you're headed. Right? You're headed to fanaticism. 2 more weeks, your wives will be wearing their tichels past their nose. They won't be able to breathe. Pikuach nefesh. You are taking a step in a dangerous... You're going to become fanatics. You're going to go off the deep end. Right? Yes, very nice. But it doesn't end. This is just the beginning. So I suggest that you don't do this. You know, some people may listen to me and some are going to say, no, it's not true. We want to do what's right. Join us. Now I have to go down to the next level, level number 6, which is denying the validity of the mitzvah. What does that mean? Not that I deny the validity of all the mitzvahs. I just say, look, you want me to join this class about Borer? You should know that if Borer was a halacha, I'd be the first one to join the class. But you should know, Borer is not a halacha. Borer is just a minhag. And in my family, we didn't have that minhag. Or Borer is just one opinion. I don't know who the other opinion is, but there's always another opinion. I'm for him. Borer is just a chumrah. Right? It's a chumrah. We were machmer in my family. Right? It's like a minig. You think that this can't be. Right? I once saw a guy drive to my shul in Miami and park a block away on Shabbos. And I didn't want to embarrass him, so I left it go on Shabbos. And during the week I saw him alone. I said to him, look, you probably think there's a mitzvah to walk on Shabbos. So you park a block away, so you get that mitzvah of walking a block. But you know there's an isser of driving on Shabbos, so it doesn't help to park a block away. He says, no, Rabbi, you don't understand. My father parked in that spot. My grandfather parked in that spot. It's a minig in our family. Okay? Fight with a minig. Okay, so Borer's only a minig. And we didn't have that minig. So I've denied the validity of the mitzvah. People say that all the time. Right? No, I don't have to do that. It's only a minig, not my minig. It's only a chumrah. It's only one opinion. Okay. That's good until somebody comes and brings me a Shulchan Aruch and a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and Rabbi Eider in English. Right? It's not a minig. It's not a chumrah. It's not one opinion. Everybody holds that using a professional bone plucker to take the bones out of your fish is an issa d'oraisa. Across the board, Ashkenazim, Sfardim, Hasidim, Misnagdim, everybody, modern Orthodox, everybody holds that it's not a minig. Now I'm stuck. I have to go down to level 7. What does that mean? I say, okay, it's a halacha, but I can't do everything. You know, I have a life. You know, God can interfere in my life up to a point. This is too much. I can't do everything. Okay, it's a mitzvah. What can I do? That means the mitzvah is not an ikkar in my life. It's not a main thing in my life. It's something I permit to interfere in my life at times. And if the mitzvah is not an ikkar, then the mitzvah, the one who commanded, is not an ikkar in my life either. That's called kofer be'ikkar. I deny that God is an ikkar in my life. He's not an intrinsic and integral part of my life. I let God interfere with my life up to a point. There's a point where I got a life and this is not. That's called kofer be'ikkar. And you can be a 99% Haredi Jew. And in that 1% thing that you don't want to change, and everybody has different things. For some people it's Shabbos. For some people it's Kashrus. This is what I ate last week. I don't want to know from these chumras, from these, what's it called, hashkochas. It has a K on it. Anywhere on the label, it's good enough for me. Right? Even if it's in the name of the product. Right? It goes. This is what I did last week. This is what I'm doing next week. For some people, it's sneers. This is the way I dressed last week. This is the way I'm dressed next week. I don't want to know from this. For some people, it's business ethics. I stole from people last week. I'm going to steal this week. And the people I steal from are goyim. It's okay to steal from goyim. I also do it to Jews, but those are not religious Jews. They're also goyim. You do it to religious Jews? Who knows if they're really religious? You know, you can't really tell. They're also goyim. So I don't want to know from this. For everybody has their area they don't want to improve. If you don't want to improve, you also don't want to feel guilty. And inevitably, human nature must put you on one of these 7 levels. It's impossible otherwise. So you may be 99% in the areas that you're willing to improve, 100% okay. And in that 1%, you're going to be on one of these 7 levels. I once gave this to, it was Haka here in Netanya, to Beis Yaakov principles, Chassidisha, some of them. And a Chassidisha Beis Yaakov principle came to me after this year. I thought to myself, they don't know what I'm talking about. This is like, you know, this is for Americans, but they're like, I can't imagine they even understand the words. She came to me after, she says, Rabbi, in Hebrew, you were talking to me. I was talking to you. She said, I really think you didn't understand what I was talking about. She said, yeah, I'll tell you why. She said, normally chassidim are not allowed to wear a shekel. They only wear a tichel or a hat over a shekel. But they can't wear a shekel. But our Rebbe permits us to wear shekel. We're Yotzim and Aklal Chassidus, we're allowed to wear shekel. My daughter got married recently, and I see after the wedding, she's not putting on a wig. She's only wearing a tichel. So I figured maybe she doesn't have time, whatever. A week went by, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Finally I asked her, what's going on? Where's your wig? She said, well, I decided that I want to be a little bit more careful. I'm not going to wear a wig. I'll be wearing this. And my initial reaction inside was, what kind of chnyok is this? What kind of afrumta, right? Why is she doing this? And I never understood, why did I feel like that? Why wasn't I proud of her? Now I realize what you said. Because I knew that if I had to do that, I wouldn't want to do it. If I had to. And therefore, I felt a little guilty that, not that I wasn't doing it, but that I wouldn't even want to do it. And therefore, I had to lash out at her and make her look like some kind of monster so I shouldn't feel guilty. Now I understand what went on in my head. So anybody can relate to this because it applies to everybody on their level. If you don't want to improve, that doesn't mean you have to become a tzaddik overnight. Be nice. But it means the desire to want to change slowly but surely, improve in all areas, little by little. At least to be open to that, to admire people who do more. Not to feel guilty and therefore to demonize them. And that's only one of the things. Hating the chachamim, it's all symptoms of this idea of, in one area of Torah or many areas, not wanting to break the status quo. And if you don't want to break the status quo, you're going to want to be comfortable, at the same time not have a guilt feeling. You're going to have to be on one of these seven levels. That, in my estimation, is what the Rashi is talking about. And if you want to, you can say you see it on other people. And if you're honest, you know, we see it by ourselves also in many, many areas, right, that we also are on some of these levels in things that we don't want to improve in.